We turn once again this morning to the account of the revolt of Absalom and his treason against the king, his father, and against the throne of Israel. Now, not to spend too much time on the story, we're trying to look at both chapters 16 and 17 this morning and then take a final look at the outcome of the revolt, God willing, next week. We could, I suppose, spend our time looking at the detail of what is recorded in these chapters and draw useful lessons from them in this way, and we'll be looking a bit at that. But I want rather to gather something of the flavor of these chapters and get some of the overall impressions that come in a reading and study of them. Now, let me illustrate what I mean. Last time, we referred to some of the psalms that are likely to have been written and belong to this crisis period in David's experience. In Psalm 61, for example, we have these words, "Hear my cry, O God, attend unto my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For thou hast been a shelter for me, and a strong tower from the enemy." Now I want to underline two things in that marvelous plea, Psalm 61. The first is the deeply moving words in verse 2, "When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I." What words, and what a thought. And that was David in his distress. The second is the statement in verse 3, "For thou hast been a shelter for me." Now, the emphasis there, it seems to me, lies on the word "thou hast been," that is, in the past. And what David means is this: his past experience of God's grace and help is made the ground and the basis of his confidence now in this present crisis. And that seems to me is an immensely important lesson. When we are in a crisis situation, when we are under intolerable pressures, we need to look back to what God has done for us in the past and remember that He is still the same today. I had a phone call last night just before the prayer meeting from a minister in Ireland who was asking me about the precise wording of a quotation he had heard me use years ago when he was a student here at New College. It was from Robert Bruce, the famous 17th century minister of St. Giles, who is famous for a series of sermons on the sacraments. And in one of these sermons, he is speaking about the times of oppression that come upon the best of God's saints at times. And speaking of the cloud that comes over a man in such a situation, when he begins to doubt God and doubt his love. And Robert Bruce, in this famous sermon, said something like this: "Call to mind former days when you were sure of God's love." And then he added this priceless word: "He loved you ince He'll love you aye. He loved you ince. He'll love you aye. Now you see, that's what David is about in the 61st Psalm. Thou hast been a shelter for me in the past. Be that shelter to me now. And the events of these two chapters before us today, chapter 16 and 17, provide evidence of how David's confidence was not misplaced and how his prayer was wonderfully answered. And this is the message that the chapters bear for us. The loving kindness of God in time of calamity. I was moved by Professor Bloch's reference to the Authorized Version translation of the great Hebrew word which speaks of covenant mercy. The loving kindness of God. All the modern translations have alternatives to that. The RSV has steadfast love. But steadfast love doesn't speak to my heart in the way that the word loving kindness speaks. And that's the message of these chapters. The loving kindness of God in time of calamity. And I invite you to look at these chapters in that light today. Now, we have been bearing in mind in this study that in the long-term view, this calamity that overtook David did so because of his sin in the matter of Bathsheba and the murder of her innocent and unsuspecting husband. And Nathan the prophet came to David and said to him very stern words that the consequences of his sin would trouble him and his whole house all the rest of his days. And that is what we have to understand lies behind this terrible tragedy. Nevertheless, and this is the important thing for us to realize, even in that dark and somber context, all was not darkness. And one of the most thrilling and reassuring notes struck in the Old Testament in relation to the covenant people of God is that God does not abandon his people in their sin. In spite of their sin, he does not abandon them. Here is a word which illustrates this point from Jeremiah chapter 30. God says, I am with thee, saith the Lord, to save thee. Though I make a full end of all nations, whither I have scattered thee, yet will I not make a full end of thee. But I will correct thee in measure and will not leave thee altogether unpunished. I will not make a full end of thee. This was correction in measure. The love that wilt not let me go is also a love that will not let us off. That's something that we have to learn and often do learn the hard way. But that love never lets his people go. And that's how it was with David. And there are many echoes in the Psalms of this sense of wonder and assurance in the various travails and distresses that he passed through as he realized again and again that God had not forsaken him, but was with him in his need. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in time of trouble. And in the 57th Psalm, which may well belong to this same period, in the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge until these calamities be overpassed. Now, now, just think of the faith that prompted such a statement. In the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge until these calamities be overpassed. I don't think that this is expressed anywhere in the whole Bible more movingly and beautifully in Isaiah chapter 54, which I invite you to look at now. This is a wonderful, wonderful chapter. Isaiah 54, reading from verse 7. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. In a little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord thy Redeemer. For this is as the waters of Noah unto me. For as I have sworn that the waters of Noah should no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee nor rebuke thee. And then this, for the mountain shall depart and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, saith the Lord that hath mercy on thee. O thou afflicted, tossed with tempest and not comforted, behold, I will lay thy stones with fair colors and lay thy foundations with sapphires, and I will make thy windows of agate and thy gates of carbuncles and all thy borders of pleasant stones, and all thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. In righteousness shalt thou be established. Thou shalt be far from oppression, for thou shalt not fear, and from terror, for it shall not come near thee. The mountain shall depart, and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed. But how does that kindness come home to our experience? Well, it does so often in the providences with which God surrounds our lives. And when we see them, it's just as if God were saying to us in our need, events have brought this about, but I will overrule them for good. You must pass this way at this time, my son, my daughter, but I will make the passing through this way as gentle and tender as it is possible to be. And he sends the balm of Gilead to touch and to heal our wounds and comfort our aching hearts, often in the most unexpected and unforeseen ways. And that is what we see in these chapters. And the message of the chapters applies in and to every human need which overwhelms the heart, whether revolt originating in the sins and failures of the past, or sorrow and bereavement that devastates heart and home, personal tragedies, family sorrows or anxieties, heartbreak or heartache of whatever kind. And many can testify to the truth of this. And how many more could testify if their eyes were opened to the workings of divine providence in their lives. Because, of course, it's not automatic. It is possible to be so preoccupied and so oppressed with the burdens and the sorrows, that we become almost incapable of seeing that God is anywhere. But we need our eyes to be opened. And I want you to look at these chapters in this light this morning. In chapter 16, verses 1 to 4, this incident with Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth. Well, here is providential provision for the king and his men fleeing in disorder from the city of Jerusalem. And Ziba said in verse 2, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. Now, it is, of course, true that Ziba's motives were very mixed here, and that he misrepresented Mephibosheth, his master, for base gain. As we see in chapter 19, verses 24 to 30, when Mephibosheth is finally confronted by David. And the matter becomes clear. Ziba had his eye on the main chance, and he did this with ulterior motives, hoping to gain. And indeed he did gain. And Mephibosheth never had his property restored fully to him. And that's a good illustration, it seems to me, of the damage that misrepresentation and slander can do when it is exercised unscrupulously. The note from Robert Calvert's Congregational Magazine that I've included in the letter of the record that's been issued today makes that point very well. However, in the mysterious providence of God, David's immediate needs were supplied at that time. And that's what we mustn't miss. That's the first thing. Then in verses 5 to 14, this horrible story about Shimei, the man who came out and cursed David. It's a very dark picture. What a graceless creature he was. And how true to the ugly part of human nature to hit a man when he is down. And you know, there are seldom wanting those who do despite to us when we're in adversity. But there is a God in heaven who hears the Shimeis of this world and takes note of their wickedness. God is always against the Shimeis of this world. Even when his saints have sinned and grieved him, he may chastise his saints. But woe betide any others who attempt to do so, as Shimei did here. But the important thing to note here is David's reaction to the cursing and his humble and submissive acceptance of it as from God. He said, it may be God will requite us good. Now you see, here's faith reaching out in the darkness to the goodness of God behind this discipline. How many of us are able to do that when we are wronged and when we are reviled? Can we reach out? Well, you see, if your eyes are open to the possible providences of God, then you can recognize that even these things can contain hidden graces and hidden blessings. Even the hour that darkest seemeth, will his changeless goodness prove. From the mist his brightness streameth. God is wisdom. God is love. Our dear Miss Campbell, you know, felt that that was her favorite hymn. God is love, his mercy brightens. And she often spoke to us of the dark days in Manchuria when the Japanese were perpetrating such cruelties. This was her theme song. Even the hour that darkest seemeth, will his changeless goodness prove. From the mist his brightness streameth. God is wisdom, God is love. And that intrepid little lady went through many dark and hazardous and perilous days during these early days of war before she was obliged to leave Manchuria. And this is David seeing behind Shimei's cursing. Let him alone. It may be God will requite us good. And David recognized the chastening and refused to allow his men to remove it. Some commentator has used the phrase, the sanctifying power of irksome people and things in our lives. Well, I reckon that term comes home to quite a lot of us. The sanctifying power of irksome people and things in our lives. You remember Paul and his thorn in the flesh? There's a mystery there. He recognized that it was a messenger of Satan to harass him, and yet it was wrought by God. Now that's a mystery we cannot ever solve, but this is the truth of the matter. And he saw beyond it to the purpose of God. Most gladly, therefore, will I glory in my infirmities. That's what David was doing. Let him alone. Let him curse. God hath bidden him. The Scottish theologian of a former generation, P.T. Forsyth, in his wonderful book on suffering and pain, writes these words. It is a greater thing to pray for pain's conversion than pain's removal. It is not always easy for the sufferer, if he remain clear-eyed, to see that it is God's will. It may have been caused by an evil mind, or a light fool, or by some stupid greed. But now it is there. A certain treatment of it is God's will, and that is to capture and exploit it for him. Now, the wonderful thing about this, and we see this in the next verses, 15 to 23, that even when Shimei was cursing David and stoning him across the valley, God was working silently on his behalf. And Hushai comes to the fore. And he enters into Absalom's court. And it's significant that these verses are put here in the story, as if to underline that even in that dark hour that David was passing through, God's gracious providence was at work in the way in which Hushai was not only accepted into Absalom's court, but also accepted as Absalom's advisor over against Ahithophel. Now, Hushai's answers to Absalom in this passage were ambiguous. And clearly, there are two different ways of taking his words. Hushai doesn't mention names. He's skillful in his approach. The important thing is that he plays on Absalom's vanity and won acceptance with him. Now, there's an interesting verse, in verse 23 at the end of the chapter, about Ahithophel. The counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was as if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. He was a man, clearly, of immense influence. His word was with power, and he was listened to. He was a dark power behind the throne. And certainly the architect of this revolt. And let's face it, the advice that he gave to Absalom was very good advice. And the question that arises is, how could that advice possibly have been overcome except by divine intervention? It was God who overruled Absalom's, Ahithophel's very astute counsel. And if Absalom had followed Ahithophel's counsel, there seems little doubt that they would have captured David while he was still at a disadvantage, and Absalom would have ascended the throne. That is how astute and skillful Ahithophel was. And yet God marvelously overruled it. Hushai played on Absalom's vanity. You go out, wait a while, order a general mobilization of all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba. We've been hearing in the news in the past week about the general mobilization that took place 50 years ago at this time, prior to the outbreak of the Second World War. I well remember these days and the sense of impending doom and the awesome feeling of dread that gripped the whole country. And I will not easily forget on the 1st of September 1939, or the 2nd, I came home. I had a summer job. I was just about to go to university. I had a summer job. I came home and met my mother on the doorstep with the newspaper, General Mobilization, in huge letters. What an indescribable feeling. Now, this is what Absalom was advised by Hushai to do. But it would take time. And that lapse of time cost Absalom his life. Now, how was it done? Well, we can only say that God overruled. And that was taking place without David even being aware of what was going on. God was silently planning in love for him, if he had only known it. And chapter 17 tells us how that council of Ahithophel was decisively overthrown. The rest of that chapter reads like some of the thrilling and daring escapades of the Second World War. The escapade of Jonathan and Ahimaaz, the spies, hidden in that well by an astute farmer's wife who covered it, the top of the well, with a canvas and put grain and stuff on it. And they assumed that this was just a grain store. And the two men were kept safe and got the message to David. And David crossed the Jordan over into Gilead. And by that act were saved. And of course, wonderfully beautiful tail end to chapter 17. The men, Absalom made Amasa captain of the host instead of Joab. Verse 27, it came to pass when David was come to Mahanaim that Shobai, the son of Nahash, and Machir, the son of Amiel, and Barzillai, the Gileadite of Rogelim, brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched pulse, honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine for David and for the people that were with him to eat. For they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. Mahanaim, did that ring a bell with you? That's where the angels of God met with Jacob. And maybe David was thinking of that. And maybe his prayer was, O God, send your angels to protect me and to provide for my needs. Or was it Abraham? Doesn't matter, the angels of God came. But whether or not he was aware of that, the fact of the matter is that three men who came with the provisions, Shobai, Machir, and Barzillai, they proved to be the angels of God to David and his men. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. These words take a new meaning when you read a story like this. And here's something. Later on, when the day of reckoning comes, David, being restored to the throne, wanted to reward these men and sought to invite Barzillai to his court. But Barzillai was an old man, and he had no inclination to be a courtier. He just wanted to go to his own place. But the thought that came to me as I was studying this particular issue yesterday was this. Sometimes, when Christians grow old, they feel they're no longer much use. They're appendages. They're superannuated. Well, here's a word for older folk. And it tells you very decisively that there are tasks that only you can fulfill, and that you can fulfill them wonderfully, just as wonderfully as Barzillai the Gileadite, who was an angel of God in a time of need to this beleaguered king. That a wonderful thought. I suppose I'm graduating into that age group now. Notice I'm saying, I am graduating, not I have graduated. But I'm getting on. And it's a comfort and an assurance to know that age has really very little to do with the service we render. When we are available to God, he takes us up and makes us his angels to those in time of need. Now, that's what I mean when I say that the loving kindness of God surrounded this man in his need, and with acts of providence that worked wonderfully and gloriously for him, the day was saved, and David was finally restored to his throne. We can see these things, but we need to ask God for grace to open our eyes to see his providences at work in our daily lives. Paul was able to say to the Philippians, I want you to know that the things that have happened unto me have been to the furtherance of the gospel. And you see that in Paul's own experience. Acts chapters 19 to 23, the time when he was up against it and a prisoner being taken to Rome. But the providences, even the storm that shipwrecked the ship, was a providence of God, working and planning silently in love for his honored servant. You see, God is always like that. Not for the Davids only, or the Pauls only, but for all his dear children. All of us. We know we're unworthy. We're not worthy of the least of his mercies. But then you see, it's not anything in us. It's something in him that makes the whole thing so wonderful. His loving kindness shall break through the midnight of the soul. That's the point. Oh God, open our eyes to see the providences that surround us from thy loving hand. He loved you ins. He'll love you aye. Blessed be his name. Let us pray. Lord, this is all very wonderful, so wonderful that we can hardly take it in or believe it. But we know that we need to believe this, Lord. So work in our hearts a simple yet robust and unquestioning faith that will lay hold upon that loving kindness that will enable us to see it working all around us, planning in love for us, day by day, in all the way that we take. We ask this for Jesus' sake. Amen.